The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Hey everyone, it's another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you.
Another joining one. Us.
Yep. We have not quit doing this yet, despite all indications that we should. Joining us today in place of our favorite Russo-German is our favorite Huntsvillian. Marcia.
We're called Huntsvagans.
Which is ironic.
Finger guns all around.
All you do is eat is meat. There's actually, they don't sell vegetables in Huntsville.
That's right. It's a hellhole. Nah, it's great here.
Speaking of hellholes, today we're going to be discussing 1979's The Man Who Stole the Sun, directed by Kazuhiko Hasegawa. But before we do that, let's do this little segment we like to call Heralds and Denouncements. Boop doo doo doo. Boop. Patrick.
I have not watched anything recently. I guess I could denounce the movie that I was gonna that I could have denounced last time, which was Gods of Egypt, but nobody liked it anyway, so I don't think that
or
I
or saw it.
Yeah, nobody liked it / saw it, so good for you, the rest of the world. Good job.
Yeah, I saw the interview where Alex Proyas got really defensive about it.
Faith and humanity restored. Oh well.
Yep.
That's it. That's all I have to say about that movie.
I'm gonna go ahead and denounce then Stephen Chow's The Mermaid. I saw this movie yesterday. At one point it had 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, and that baffles me.
It's had some really favorable reviewers.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's sort of a big old mess. Like, lots of scenes go on way longer than they should, and jokes are dragged out way too long, and then, like, even the structure of setting up the movie is really incompetent. There's like three or four scenes that don't make that start the movie. It's like 1, 2, 3, 4 like scenes in a row that start the movie, and none of them make sense until later, once you finally figure out what the story of the movie is. Like, it's like a bunch of people sitting in a room and they're like bidding on something, and I'm like, I don't know who these people are or like why they're bidding on this. Like, the scene doesn't introduce like, oh, this is this thing that feels like narratively relevant. It's just like, here's some land and a bunch of people are bidding a lot of money on it, and then those same like rich people show up to a party and they all get like this like super like movie introduction where they're like stepping out of their cars and walking kind of in slow motion. I'm like, who are these people? Like, why am I looking at them? And finally, like retroactively during that party, it sort of explains a little bit of the plot until finally put it together. But that's just the movie. I'm like, this is a structural mess. Like, why is this well reviewed? And also, it made $500 million in China, making it by far the highest grossing movie in Chinese history. Yeah. And that baffles me too, because it's basically just a romantic comedy.
Wait, you broke up a little bit. Where did it make $500 million?
Oh, at the Chinese box office.
Oh.
It's the highest grossing movie.
Wow.
In Chinese history.
Huh.
But,
well, different cultural standards, I guess.
Yeah, but it's just like a pretty standard romantic comedy. Like, it'd be like If You've Got Mail made $500 million. Like,
it didn't?
Did it not? Yeah. I was
gonna say, Are you sure it didn't?
Sleepless in Seattle didn't.
But everyone can relate to the concept of getting mail.
Yep.
Marcia, I know you watch the most movies out of all of us. Do you have anything to herald or denounce this week?
No, I was going to talk about books since I never watch any movies.
Nice.
Okay, I have to look it up. I read this one called The Last Girl. I don't really remember the author. Joe Hart. It's like if The Hunger Games were a regular adult novel, kind of like that. So,
was it good?
Just like mega gory. Yeah, I thought it was good. Like, the whole premise is like all of a sudden people just stop having girls and all the babies born are male. And then there's this big government revolution about it. So, I don't know. I thought it was good. I'm going to turn on to some more light reading. Huh?
I said Children of Girls. Similar from us. Except for that's no babies, but still.
When you said all of a sudden they decided to stop, I thought you were going to say being polite and start getting you.
No, it super sucked because even though there were only like 5 women left who could have babies, they treated them like total crap and like kept them in government areas, you know, instead of being revered like goddesses. But, you know, whatevs.
Like,
men are terrible. Whatevs.
Just like real
bullshit.
Life.
Some major shit.
Well, I guess keeping the not denouncement train, because we had a herald in there, but the film denouncement train going, I finished watching a movie called Aurora today from 2010. Not the sci-fi film that hasn't been released yet, but one of Christy Pugh's six stories about Bucharest, and it's extremely boring. There's a scene where he is at like a cafeteria and he wants to get his cake to go and he wants to get it wrapped up, and he's just standing there waiting while other people order until someone will help him wrap the cake, and I'm like, I hate this. Like, I watch and enjoy a lot of boring movies, but I don't come to film for realism. Like, A Taste of Cherry is a super boring movie on the face of it, but it's also not realistic in a lot of ways. Or the movie that we just watched for the last podcast, Yi Yi, is a movie that is mundane in a lot of ways, but not boring or realistic. It has like a point of view and stuff to say, and there's a lot of scenes in this movie that are very, very specifically just about capturing reality, but reality in the most stupid moments that like aren't really worth being captured. And in fact, the parts at the end that are kind of like exciting, like to me, almost make me more mad because it feels like he's gone against his own like thesis of like boringness. Like when this like incredible violence happens, I feel like it should also be boring, but then he does things like have like a weird musical playing in the background on the TV, and I'm like, this seems like something out of a completely different movie than this,
right.
And like that almost makes me more frustrated that he like goes cinematic, I guess, in these moments. So yeah, I didn't like that movie at all.
Woo! Yay for not liking stuff.
Hooray.
Woohoo!
The hate is everywhere.
Alright, so this is my pick, right? So I guess I should do the plot. So this movie is about a high school teacher. I think his name's Makoto Kido. And he decides to steal some plutonium from a nuclear power plant and build an atomic bomb so that he can hold the city of Tokyo hostage and get things that he wants. And he does it once and it's successful, but then after that he realizes he wants to hold the city hostage, but he doesn't know what he wants. So then he farms out wanting stuff to a radio show, and the DJ asks their listeners, what would you want if you could have anything you want? And apparently what one thing they want is the Rolling Stones to come to Japan. So they try to arrange that, and then a police officer begins the investigation, and most of the second half of the movie is sort of just a cat and mouse thing with the reporter becoming figuring out who he is and becoming romantically involved with Kiddo, and then the cop trying to track him down, and it all comes to a head, as it always must with these kinds of things.
As these things are wont to do.
Yep. All right, Marcia, since you're filling in for Ilya, you're first. What did you think of this movie?
I thought it was pretty funny. I probably watched it the most recently, I guess, since I literally just turned it off before I started the podcast. I haven't actually seen A Clockwork Orange from start to finish, but the parts of Clockwork Orange that I had seen reminded me of this movie. And that it was like serious stuff was happening, but nobody was taking it seriously. But yeah, I enjoyed it. I don't think I would like show it to anyone, but I enjoyed watching it.
It's a private pleasure, this movie.
What about you guys?
I liked this movie. It was fine. I tried to look up what other people thought of it after I finished watching it, and the first review that I read was about how super crazy it was, and I was like, it was kind of crazy. I don't know. I feel like sort of everything coming out of Japan from this period is like so wild that this doesn't like really stand out to me as like being that different from the rest of it, which is what this review was arguing. And especially considering how referential this movie seemed to me, it didn't seem like it was that crazy.
This was like a zero on my crazy scale. Yeah. Maybe I have a different crazy scale than people, though.
I thought there was one scene that was really super crazy that I was like, whoa, but other than that one scene, and that's the scene where he swings into the cop station to re-steal the atomic bomb while wearing an insane mask, and then just starts shooting up the police station and grabs his atomic bomb and jumps out of the window. I thought that was pretty crazy, but other than that, yeah. I really liked the beginning in that I didn't know what was going on at first, and I thought that they played that sort of tension, because I didn't look up what the movie was about at all, really well.
Me neither.
I was like, why is he spying on this place? And then, what is he interested in doing? And then once I knew he was building an atomic bomb, I was like, what is he doing it for? And then I thought it was kind of funny when he didn't even really know why he was doing it. But then it kind of, dragged a little bit in the middle, and I didn't feel like it had a very conclusive ending, and I super didn't understand the woman's motivation at all, which I guess is a complaint I have in general with a lot of Japanese cinema, that women are just there to do something for men.
They take on the ambient flavor, much like tofu.
This tofu magic. Yes.
They take on the hopes and dreams of the surrounding sauce.
It's the tofu woman. Gimme the Japanese.
Was anyone else reminded of The Pearl?
The John Steinbeck story?
Yeah, Steinbeck. That's what I was thinking this whole time, was The Pearl.
A little bit, I guess, because the bomb is spherical, I suppose. That's the only real...
No, come on, come on, come on.
I don't know. I don't know if it's like a big pearl, a big atomic pearl.
Yeah.
I don't know if I see the... I guess so. I don't... It's not like it's something he finds, though, that, like, causes him trouble. Like, he, like, goes out of his way to make this thing. So,
well, obviously not that part.
What? there's no baby either. I don't... Yeah.
He doesn't blow his toe off.
I don't know. I liked this movie. I thought it was okay. It seemed like the kind of movie that I would watch on, like, a lazy Sunday, like, if it was on TV. Like, I turned it on, I was like, oh, this movie's kind of fun. It's kind of like a, you know, I don't know. It feels like a lot of, like, I don't know. It feels like this kind of movie was made a lot in the 70s, where it was just kind of like a 70s drama. Like, you know, The Taking of Pelham 123, or... what was the other movie I was thinking of? It's just
Day Afternoon.
Maybe even that too. Yeah, like it feels like the kind of I don't know. It felt really like structured in that way, like a well structured just like Sunday afternoon movie where you just like kick back and watch it on the TV. And I was just like, all right. And contrary to what Marja said, I feel like I would show this to other people, like. If people are, like, looking for, like, an end to, like, what, like, Japanese cinema have I never seen before, I would probably be like, watch The Man Who Stole the Sun. You might like that. Like, it's a bit of a, you know, a jaunt.
That's true. If I knew anyone that would ask me that question, I would probably recommend this to them.
Yeah.
Lazy Sunday. Wake up in the late afternoon.
Yeah.
Choose to watch a movie about nuclear anxiety.
Yeah, this movie doesn't really, like, feel like it had a lot deeper to say about nuclear stuff. It just, it kind of felt like it used that as, I don't know, like, a way to show, like, the character doing something really serious while still having, like, no idea what he actually wanted from life. Like, he was really quick to do something really over the top, but he hadn't actually worked out what he wanted to gain from it at all. And I thought that was kind of a funny way to, like, frame everything, where it's like, okay, this guy's like, normally there'd be like some really deep-seated tension about this, but he's just kind of like on a lark. He's just like, I'm gonna make a bomb, and then he's like, because I want baseball games to go on longer on television. Like, sure, why not? Like, this is just super overreaction to that small problem. But, like, yeah, I don't know. It almost feels like he just does it because he can do it.
Although, that is pretty shitty. I'd be really mad if, like, they're like, here, you can watch this sports game, but since you're not here, you only get to watch the first three quarters of it, and then you just have to find out how it ended tomorrow. I can understand being upset about that.
Yeah.
All right, Basil, are you going to keep the okay train rolling?
I was going to actually try and see if I could go as long as possible and maybe like an hour into the podcast be like, I like this movie.
This is an abnormally long like-dislike section.
Yep. Yeah, I feel pretty much the same as everyone else. I think I would have liked it a lot more if it was like an hour and 30 minutes or an hour and 45 maybe, like that. The fact that it's 2.5 hours, it doesn't really need to be, as Ruben said. The midsection kind of drags, where it's like, you know, there's a lot of scenes of him calling the cops with his voice scrambler, and then them being like, how do we trace this call? And apparently it's a whole lot of work to, like, get a phone call traced in Japan in the 70s, but I feel like they could have, even if they needed to have a certain amount of those types of scenes, they could have made each one of them shorter, that they all feel like sort of unnecessarily long. And the fact that the movie's 2.5 hours is also doesn't feel necessary for, because I sort of agree with what Patrick said, that it does feel mostly like a pretty jaunty movie that it's like not super invested in creating something epic or even in doing that on purpose and making an intentionally not epic, really long movie. But it just feels like almost a coincidence that it's 2.5 hours long. And that there's like 5 different endings at the end of this movie. Like there were so many scenes where I was like, oh, this feels like this is probably the last scene. And then there are like 4 more scenes after yeah. that. And I'm like, all right, well, maybe this one is. And then that still wouldn't be the end. So I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like this movie could have benefited actually from like a big American studio, like, I don't know, like coming in and just like, all right, we need to tighten this up, we need to tighten that up, we need to cut this here, cut this there. And like I actually feel like this is one instance where like a big studio movie making really could have shored this thing up and really made it really tight and exciting.
Did everyone else know that Paul Schrader's brother wrote the script for this?
I saw the name and I was like, is he related to Paul Schrader? Because I didn't notice
Paul Schrader's brother.
I did notice I noticed a taxi driver reference in there pretty early on in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Does everyone know who Paul Schrader is?
Quickly Googling Paul Schrader. Yes.
He was the screenwriter for Taxi Driver, if you don't know.
Yep.
And the director of Mishima, A Life in 4 Parts.
Yes. And
which was also written by his brother.
Rolling Thunder as well.
A Hollywood studio might have cut some things out, like the part when he sprays his cat in the face with a... some of the funnier parts of, like, nuclear bombs going off while, like... vibrant 70s TV music plays.
Which shot of him sleeping with his A-bomb. It's just like resting.
Us basically watching like an hour of Japanese TV with him.
Yep. Yeah. I actually thought the cat scene could have been cut too. Like I didn't particularly like it, and I didn't particularly understand.
Very upsetting.
Well, yeah, and
especially because you don't realize that it's sleeping gas at first. Yeah. He's just petting his cat, and then he just grabs an aerosol and sprays it.
I was like, "Oh, that's horrible." I didn't understand what the purpose of that thread was at all, really. Like, other than to show, like, "Oh, he invents stuff sometimes," which I guess we could have gotten.
He's got some sort of mysterious purpose, not just a cat sprayer.
Yeah. I just didn't understand. It was like, all right, he put that guy to sleep and stole his gun. Like, that's it. That's the end of that thread. Like, he doesn't ever do anything.
Oh, so he can have a gun.
The gun in the heist.
Yeah, that's how he got the gun.
He could get a gun other places, I feel like.
Nope.
Not in Japan.
That's the entire story of Stray Dog. Is about the legal gun market and how that one cop loses his gun and how it's a super big deal.
No, yeah, I understand that, but I mean, like, you didn't need to devote that much time to talking about how he got a gun. It could have just been, like, he got it on the black market, or he, like, met somebody in a back alley and bought a gun, or something like that. Like, he goes
to... Yeah, but then we wouldn't have gotten to see him in that cool old man makeup.
Yeah. So, also, when did this movie come out again? 79?
Mm-hmm.
Was there, like, an established anime at this point?
I mean, I think Gundam.
Astro
Gundam
Boy was
out.
At
this point. Yeah, Gundam.
Because when I first saw it, I was like, oh, that's the badass teacher trope from anime. You know, it's like the lazy teacher, but then he goes home and he's a badass.
I don't know if...
but I think this predates that in anime.
I don't know if Great Teacher Onizaka was out yet, but... I'm pretty sure like stuff like Gundam was out, like the original Gundam had come out at this point, and so yeah, there was probably
maybe this movie invented that trope,
or maybe you know
that's right.
It was probably
a bunch
manga.
Of young nerds saw it and they're like, that's like me. Like everyone thinks I'm boring, but really I'm doing this anime shit in my spare time.
I'm so anime in my spare time.
Yes.
I guess another thing about Japanese cinematic history is that something I noticed is that it seems like Japanese action is often like a lot messier, like not as graceful, like people tackle each other and it looks a lot more like it would in reality, like everyone's like legs going everywhere and stuff like that. And I thought that that was fun to watch.
Did you like the stop motion?
Oh yeah.
I wish they had kept going with that.
You mean the still frames?
Yeah, when I say stop motion, if you haven't seen the movie, it's like there was like a frame and then it would cut to like, I don't know, a second ahead in the action. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the way that
it was like they chopped a bunch of frames out.
No, I did not like that.
I didn't think it was uniform enough. It felt like they were doing it to like cut around mistakes or something like that. I couldn't really tell why they did it. Because it didn't look particularly awesome, but it did look different.
I really like the way that the gun flares look for the still frames when they're shooting at each other.
Well, yeah. I suppose that.
I like that he... Cool. Was it him or was it the people at the nuclear power plant that had a flamethrower?
Oh, that was him.
It was him that had a flamethrower.
It was him for some reason.
How did he... Where did he get a... And see, there again, like, the movie doesn't explain how he got a flamethrower. Like, it doesn't, he didn't show him, like, going and knocking somebody out with his sleeping gas to get a flamethrower. Where does he get that?
Maybe he just found it in the plant. It's just hanging around.
Oh, man.
People get bored working at a nuclear power plant.
I guess so. Just a wild flamethrower party. Yeah. It was crazy.
I like the night shots, though, before the montage of still frames. I was like, these are good-looking night shots.
His costume reminded me of Danger Diabolic, which I also liked.
For sure. I thought that the Foley work was pretty good in this movie, too. Like, I thought the sounds were very recognizable and, like, used well, and like the alarm for like whenever he was making a phone call at like the cop station was like
was
really
great.
Grating in a way that like, that worked, that like by the last time you heard it I was like could barely take it.
Yeah, that sound it felt like it almost like resonated a little bit more than every other sound in the movie, because I felt like I almost had to like turn my speakers down when it came on, because I was like, god, this is loud, and it like it feels like it's going everywhere. Like, it feels like it's just moving through me, this sound.
What do you guys think that crazy old man wanted to talk to the Emperor about?
His son died in the war.
Yeah, that's what I was assuming, too. Something having to do with the war, because he's wearing a Japanese army uniform.
This was after...
World War II? Yeah.
Yeah, this was like after they lost the war, right? Not before?
By like 20-something years?
Pretty much, yeah.
Like 35, actually. But no, what I was going to say is after, what's his name? The guy we were just talking about, the Schrader movie, killed himself. Hmm? Mishima.
Yeah.
Because that's, I don't know, like, the old man stuff reminded me a little bit of that real life thing that he did, where he, like, marched into a police station and was like, Japan's too weak, we need to bring back the Imperial Army. And then he committed seppuku.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He's an intense dude.
Wait, who did that?
Yukio Mishima, he's a really famous writer in Japan, and then he was in a bunch of movies in the 60s, and then he did that, and so he's pretty famous for being sort of a fascist and being embarrassed about the fact that Japan lost the war and embraced westernization. But anyway, like, sort of this idea of like a suicide mission to see the Emperor reminded me a little bit of the same thing.
There was a cool shot during that scene where it cuts to the police, but there are no policemen there, and it's just all the police vehicles with like their lights flashing, and it's like they're this cold mechanical force instead of like made up of humans at that point. I was like, this is unnerving. Because yeah. It did feel like you were supposed to have some sympathy for that crazy old vet.
It's true.
Yeah, it's interesting. All of the, I don't know. It's weird. I don't know exactly what the movie was trying to say, with all of the World War II stuff. But I mean, obviously, any time that you bring an atom bomb into a Japanese movie, like, there's going to be some sort of reference to Hiroshima, and I don't know what exactly it was saying, but I felt like it was really important that he was like wearing a, you know, he wanted to talk to the emperor about the war and was wearing an army uniform, and that, I don't know, for whatever reason, like kind of spurs the teacher into, I guess, acting on the atom bomb thing, or if he was just going to do that before that anyway. I couldn't really tell exactly, like, because there's not really any
indication. Well, he's already spying on the atomic plant, so.
Yeah, but there's not really any indication that he's, like, serious about, you know, like, making the bomb or, like, taking the material beforehand, I guess, other than him just, like, looking at it through binoculars.
Yeah, but he already stole the gun, too. I don't know.
True. But, again, like, that thread still seems so disconnected. Even though he uses the gun in the heist, like, it's not a heist that you specifically need a gun for. Like, he seemed to have it pretty under control, even without the gun. So he was, like, throwing bombs.
I don't know, that party gets he gets attacked and stuff.
Well, yeah, but he had, like, explosives for all that, too. Like, he had, like, all these bombs and had a flamethrower, and it was just, like, a gun seems like maybe, like, a last resort safety thing, but...
But he needed it for the final scene.
It's true. Well, yeah, he did need it for that. But I think he
One of the final scenes. One of the ones that I thought was going to be the final scene.
Yeah, I thought the movie was kind of conservative. Someone said something about something. But then people kept talking, so I couldn't respond then. But it seemed kind of like, you know, the main guy was like a hip, cool dude, and he was even played by like a big rock star at the time, and then Bunta Sugawa was like a more classic, like Clint Eastwood style, like action star of like 10 to 15 years ago or whatever, and there's this like tension between like an old school type of justice. Like he says something, the cop says something really creepy at one point when he's like, I'll kill someone any way I can or whatever. And then, like, you know, at the beginning, like, the other guy's, like, almost silly, like, asking for the Rolling Stones and baseball games to go on, you know, but then, like, it's like, oh, but if you leave this stuff unchecked, then it'll become the absolute worst. And it's like, sometimes you gotta put your trust in, like, the uncool right-wing dudes.
Although I don't think that he's ever portrayed particularly sympathetically. He seems like an asshole like the whole movie, and things were kind of gonna be fine, like, until he like rides on that helicopter and shoots his girlfriend. He was like pretty excited to be alive until that, and then he's like, I guess now that I don't have a girlfriend, I can just blow up all of Tokyo and I don't care anymore.
Yeah, it seems like maybe the movie's a little bit about, like, the reconciliation of those two sides. Because, I don't know, it feels a little bit like it's, like, trying to... It points out the absurdities of both, you know, both Kiddo and the inspector. Because I think they're both, like... They both don't come out, like, looking great at the end. Like, the inspector just seems like, I don't know, he seems like almost like the Terminator a little bit by the end of the movie, because he gets, like, in that last scene, he gets shot so many times.
Well, the comparison to Dirty Harry feels accurate.
He's still, like, I don't know, like, coming after him like a zombie or whatever. But,
I think it's weird that everyone in the movie thinks the government can do anything.
That's, yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, let me talk to the Emperor. It'll definitely solve whatever problem I have, you know, that old man. And then this guy, he's like, oh yeah, the government. I want the stones, man. Get the government to give me the stones. And then the police officer, obviously. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I thought it was sort of like trying to comment on, I guess, like, Japanese male sort of feelings of, I guess, like, impotence or whatever, like, that the war kind of took that away, because, I mean, he's really invested in this idea of having an atomic bomb, and that will, like, make him important. Like, he calls himself number 9. He's like, yeah, like, only 8 other places have this, and now I'm the 9th one, and, like, I'm my own nation now because I have an atomic bomb. That's what, you know. And that there is sort of a weird, I don't know, I agree with Ruben, a little bit of a conservative outlook to that, that, like, it's, that somehow this, everyone's so sad and so desperate, they're gonna do whatever they can to feel powerful again because we embarrassed them so badly in the war.
I suppose so.
Again, sort of a tie into Yukio Mishima.
Killing the dead ain't no crime.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, he does say that, and he's like, you know, pretty much believes that everyone's just a zombie, like, who cares about any of them? They've already wasted their lives by being in it. Japan is the worst.
seems like a little bit like Tokyo Sonata in that respect. Another movie that seems to be saying Japan is the worst.
Well, Tokyo Sonata is different in that it's kind of making fun of that dude for, like, feeling super bad about his impotence. And then it's,
yeah,
like,
well, yeah, yeah,
this is not, like, a thing to be super concerned about. Whereas this, right, is from a long tradition of Japanese movies that's like, oh, man, it sucks that men can't think of themselves as powerful as they used to. It's the worst.
What happened to us?
Yeah. I would put Tokyo Sonata more in the tradition of, like, Ugetsu, in that it's about men who are super concerned about their vanity, but thinks that they're kind of ridiculous for being that concerned.
It's true. The way he, like, looks up to that guy who's, like, he's got it all figured out, pretending that he still has a job.
Like, he's so good at pretending he has a job.
I really like the music in this movie.
Me too.
That was pretty fun.
I don't like 70s television, but I really like 70s television music, which is what this reminded me of. And yeah, also, of course, then made me think of Spider-Man 2 and the sequence with the raindrops falling on my head. How good that sequence is.
Yeah, I really like that, or most of it, until it turns into, like, a real chase, but when the police are chasing him down the highway after he steals that super fast car, the majority of the chase is just, like, him driving on the highway and they're driving behind him, and it's, like, playing this just, like, slow, sort of, like, happy sounding song, and it just feels like a regular driving montage instead of a chase scene, and I really like that. Yeah. But then it becomes more of a regular one once he, like, jumps that truck and,
yeah,
plays chicken and stuff.
I thought it was hilarious that he told her to duck and then he jumped over the truck. I thought he was going to go under it.
Yeah.
And then,
yeah,
he just goes
and
flying
then the
over
cop
it.
Goes
I was like,
under
what?
It.
It's just so funny because you were so expecting him to go under it. You're like, where did that ramp come from that he jumped over?
One of my favorite parts is where he tricks her into holding up the building so it won't fall over. Like, he's leaning against a building and he's like, oh, it's gonna fall, and she gets it and he's like, what are you doing?
Good trolling.
Yes.
A couple of things that I thought were references that I'm not sure is when he throws the money into the air, I thought that maybe it was Dog Day Afternoon, which we brought up earlier. And then there's a part where they talk about how they're cooling their apartments, and the cop has an air conditioner and he just has a single fan. It made me think of High and Low, and High and Low, how he talks about like how he lives in like this nice house on the hill that's like well cooled, and then the other guy is like super sweaty all the time in his like dank apartment in the slums.
There's also a visual reference to Cruel Story of Youth during
when
the
when he throws her in the water.
it's not quite that, but they're walking on those logs, same as that movie.
Yeah, that's what. Well, I didn't notice that part, but when he throws her in the water and she's like, "You're cruel," and I was like,
yeah, that's a little too on the nose.
There's a visual rhyming sequence that I thought was cool, where Bunta Sadaro's character was walking down like a really long hallway with like that, you know, disappearing point of focus, with like this super brilliant light behind him, and then later the same thing is happening with the main character, except it's down the street. It's like one's out in the open and one's like contained in a building. I don't know. That was cool.
That's pretty cool. Pretty cool.
I don't really have that much to say about this movie.
Yeah, I liked how magenta it was the whole time.
It's true. Oh yeah, I really liked when he stole the plutonium and he like makes a change into that blue color, and there's like those like thick blue molecules. I thought those looked really cool. I was like, that's a nice color.
Yeah, it really does go like into that. Detail about how to make plutonium into
I read something that the movie actually had to be cut because the government was upset at how much they explained how to make an atomic bomb.
They were like, wait a second, somebody could watch this and figure out how to make an atomic bomb.
It's like he says anyone can make an atomic bomb these days.
You just need to steal the plutonium.
Or, you know, buy it from some Libyans.
When
right?
The cop was like, oh, this guy's lonely. I don't know that I got that from him during the movie until the cop said that. I really got, like, boredom from everyone. Like, everyone was bored, and this was the most fun thing they could think of doing.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. That sort of shifts it, and then I was like, oh, yeah, I guess he is lonely since now he's, like, super into this reporter woman or whatever, but...
Yeah, it did seem like it was like he was like, oh, I know what I can use this for, connecting with people. So he starts like using it to connect with her, and in a weird way also kind of using it to connect with the detective too, because he's like, hey, this, you know, this inspector was kind of a cool guy, like he, you know, got the job done. And yeah,
and I guess that could be like seen as like a commentary on people who grew up like just watching movies and TV, and is like, oh, it's really cool in movies when there's like a criminal and then there's a cop and they're like sort of talking to each other, but then they're also like rivals. Like, maybe I can have that in my life. That'd be cool.
Then you forget that the cop usually has to kill the guy at the end.
Yep. He does almost everything he can.
More than humanly
possible.
Did you like how the woman like knows that he's Mr. A-Bomb just because he shows up to her show twice? She's like, he's gotta be the guy.
Nobody ever comes to my show twice.
Because he was there.
Both times.
Yep.
As everyone in the movie keeps saying, she's smart.
Yep. There's a poster
I thought that she was only...
Superman.
Oh, nice.
Oh yeah, I remember the Superman poster.
I thought that the main reason she was interested in him was just because, like, she was excited by the news story. She's like, oh man, this guy's a great story. I'm gonna hitch my wagon to this. This will be great for my career. Yes.
Yeah, that doesn't really make any sense, though, when she, like, doesn't turn him in and, like, gets into this dangerous car chase. And then dies, and then she's like, live.
Yeah.
Live a long life. Part. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yep.
And he doesn't listen. He's like, no thanks.
The turn for me came when he was like, she saw that his hair was coming out, and then she like looked up like the symptoms of radiation poisoning, I guess, and it's like he's going to die. And she was like, just like, oh no, I have to save him or whatever. So I was like, oh, I kind of thought she was like in it for herself too up at that point, because I really like that scene actually between her and the inspector, where he's like trying to kind of coerce her into helping him, and he keeps trying to like use different tactics where he's like trying to be a hard ass, but then he's like, he thinks that she might be into him, so he's like kind of being romantic to her, and she's just like, get away from me. She's like, I don't like you.
And then she's like, he gave me a dream?
Yeah, that I didn't
question
understand.
Question marks?
What?
Yeah.
She realizes now that you really can have what you want. All you need is an A-bomb.
Like, yeah.
Aladdin's A-bomb. Exactly.
You thought that the...
All you need is bomb. Bomb. Bomb is all you need.
I did really like the part when she said three cheers for A-bombs, but then quickly was like, oh, I don't want to make the survivors of Nagasaki and Hiroshima sad.
Pretty cool how he jumps out of that helicopter.
And survives that like 40 foot fall.
Yeah. I thought he was gonna fall into the water. I was like, oh, he's falling into the water, and then just like on the ground. I was like, oh no, he broke both his legs. Like, there's no way his legs are not broken.
No, he's fine. He just keeps going.
That's again, he's like the Terminator.
A little bit. Oh, I forgot about this until I saw my note, but when he's making the A-bomb, it starts playing Bob Marley.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that scene. That scene was so ridiculous. It wasn't even a recorded version. It was like a live version of Get Up, Stand Up. And he was just like dancing around his apartment.
Get up, stand up.
Boy, the bomb. I like the way that they did, I don't remember what you call it, but normally like someone who's trying to find a potential suspect, they describe them and then someone draws it with the police. Sketch artists. Here they had like a series of photographs with different facial features, and they would just switch them in and out to like create a face, and I was like, that's way better.
Yeah,
it's a much better system.
And she obviously sees the ones that she
She's
right?
There's a point where it looks almost exactly like him,
and she's like, no,
she's
no.
like, nope, mm-mm.
Nope.
And that's, like,
and that's the part where I was like, really? Mm. What?
Yeah, the detective's like giving her the side eye, like, I know what's up here. She knows something.
I like that we got like the tiniest sliver of a drug sequence with him. Like, I don't know what he was doing in front of that. Plutonium.
Oh, yeah, where he's like,
he was like inside of it.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the part where he like walks outside of the mall and he is like the sky turns purple or whatever because he's like having radiation sickness.
I guess that could be too. This one was like, I don't know if he was sleeping or what, but it's like it shows the ball of plutonium resting on its little mat, and then he was like projected to be inside of it with like something in his stomach. Yeah.
He's like naked inside of it.
Is he high in this? But I guess they don't allow that in Japanese movies.
Yeah, no one does any drugs in Japanese movies.
Or in Japan. Or ever.
Or anywhere.
It's an untapped market, you guys. We should get in on this. Let's not release this episode and get some drugs into Japan. We'll be millionaires.
Don't watch Paprika or Summer Wars. Those movies definitely weren't influenced by drugs.
They sure were. Or, you know, like Perfect Blue or Millennium Actress or
So
Satoshi Kon just loves hallucinogens.
I believe it.
Sorry, what were you going to say, Marcia?
I have to Google something real quick. Ichi the Killer? No. Wasn't there a guy who ate people, and then when he got out of prison, he became kind of like a mild celebrity? Like, he would go to all the talk show circuits in Japan?
Maybe. I have not heard of this. Sounds like a cool guy, I guess.
This is a real thing.
I hope he's like a motivational speaker.
If I ate people, you can eat people.
Maybe he could have like a cooking show or something.
Also good.
To serve mankind.
So I felt like, oh, yeah, I see. Maybe this guy would have been like that guy if he had like given it all up and just worried about his beef with the cop.
Yeah. He could have been a celebrity.
I'm sure there must have been a mistranslation at this point, but when the students are talking about the teacher after he gets through the hostage situation, and they're like, he's so cool, one of them says, he didn't even fall asleep. And I was like, that can't be right.
No, that was right.
No, yeah,
he fell asleep on the bus, like right before the hostage thing happened.
He's always falling asleep. Griffing on him.
Yeah, they were making fun of him.
It doesn't make any sense. Who would fall asleep during a hostage situation?
I think it was an exaggeration of his like normal behavior. I think they were still kind of making fun of him. They're still like, yeah, he's still a lazy guy, though. He just happened to not be lazy.
Not this time.
That one instance.
Way to go, teach.
Did you like the Tarzan foreshadowing when he's just like really excited, I think, about getting the plutonium, and he's swinging on the rope in the like playground area of the school, and then later he swings on a rope again. It's part of his plan.
Yep.
Rope swinging,
and then he swings on a rope on accident and it saves his life.
Yeah.
When he falls off the roof.
Yeah. That bit I didn't think that was a bit ridiculous, where he like hits the wire. I mean, and then it breaks
the part where he shoots him like 15 times wasn't I think that entire part is very absurd on purpose.
Yeah, that whole sequence was pretty like, what is going on here?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good. Yeah. Tied up.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey. We also foreshadowed the ending of this podcast.
Because about
how long people had to record.
Because, as you know, every one of our podcasts that has a beginning also has an ending.
So far.
If you enjoy when our podcasts end, you should subscribe to them using your podcast listening app. Give us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. Because we like it.
Guess we do.
Yeah, we do.
It's awesome.
Until next time, cadets. Liz Cannon signing off.
Bye.
Double wave.